The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition. We're on today's show. We're actually going to take on a bit of a unique topic, something we haven't really talked about before, I don't think, in any great detail at least. And that is, we had a listener write in and ask us, what might I be worried about if I had an unexpected windfall, like an inheritance? And so Jim has the details on what this person's question was, but we figured it would be actually a great topic for some, just comments or a list of things that we could contribute to this question they've got in a topic area that we haven't really talked about before. So Jim's joining me from downstairs. He's at least in the same building today, but still on the phone, so it probably won't sound a whole lot different than when he's at home.
It won't sound better since I'm only like 50 feet from you instead of 32 miles.
In modern times, all the transmission is digital, so it doesn't matter how far away you are. That's why. Well, do you remember when you were really little and you would call someone in another country, it would sound like you're talking to the moon? Nowadays, it doesn't really matter.
Okay, right? Well, guess I don't sound. I was contemplating going upstairs and having you talk to the wall and I talk to the other wall. But you know what we need to do is, I told you before, if we open up those two windows, I'll be willing to go upstairs because that crossbreeds will just blow the poisoned air from you out the window.
I hate to say it, but I've been up here long enough. If I have poison air, I wouldn't be here anymore probably.
Well, one never knows. You could be one of them asymptomatic carriers just waiting to get little old me ill.
One never knows. No.
But maybe we'll do that. Maybe I'll go upstairs, open up those two windows, because you can get a good cross breeze growing right through those windows, and I'll feel a little safer recording in the same room.
It's pretty hot today.
Well, we have the AC on. Don't you feel it? Don't you put the AC on?
Well, you want to open the windows and have the AC on?
To keep alive, yes. Oh. I will do that. Okay. I have no problem with that.
I guess that's all good. Everything my dad told me. What are you doing leaving the windows open when the AC's on?
Yeah, well, breaking all rules. Your breaking dad didn't deal with COVID. All right. But maybe next time we will do that. That way I don't have to hold a phone in my hand either. I like to talk with both hands moving, as you know. Okay, so we got this email, and I thought to myself, we could really delve deeply into this because it's a topic I don't believe we've ever really chatted about before. So I decided to try to turn this into an EDU show and delve a little bit deeper, even though you may be listening and thinking, oh, goodness, I didn't come into a sudden windfall. I don't need to listen to the show. I think a lot of what Chris and I are going to be telling this listener they may want to consider doing or at least evaluating would be things that everyone can benefit from Chris, not just people who receive a sudden windfall.
Yes.
Okay, so the email begins. Obviously, this person has a sense of humor, so it's a good thing for me, for them, that I have a sense of humor, or I would be just crinkling this email and throwing it away. It begins, "Hi, Jim, go Eagles. Oops. Ooh. Oops, I mean Tom Brady. Oops, I mean the Pats." So, yes, the person is a fan, or at least a football fan, because go Eagles, that's kind of a throwback to Brady's last Super Bowl non-victory. And then, of course, go Brady doesn't apply anymore since he now is no longer with the Pats. So they threw in go Pats. But I smiled and laughed at that and thought, that is cute. I'll let it slide, the little dig against my man crush Tom Brady. Okay, and then she lists her name, which I'm not quite sure. I think the name is a fake name, Georgia from Georgia. Remember we have a bunch of people who do that?
Yes, which you thought we just had a lot of.
I thought we had a lot of Georgias at first, yes. Well, you know, we did. We got a bunch in all of a sudden. Georgia's from Georgia. But Georgia from Georgia. Love the podcast, recent listener. Here is my deal. Would love to hear you tackle this on an upcoming show. My husband, he is in his early 60s, and I'm in my mid-40s, have two 20-year-old children. So there is an age difference, and let's keep that in mind, Chris, because there is an age difference between the two of them. If he's early 60s, let's peg him at 62. Mid-40s, let's peg her at 46. I'm just making these up because we, of course, don't have their specifics on this. But that puts them with approximately 15, 16-year age difference between the two of them. Mm-hmm. And that could impact any type of planning scenario, not just a windfall, someone who gets a windfall, but other people who just have a larger age difference between the spouses makes for some unique planning issues. Would you agree?
Yes, yes, particularly in coordinating things that are age triggered, like Social Security claiming, things like that, other annuity turning on at certain ages. RMD ages, things like that are age triggered. There's some unique complexities when there's a big difference in ages.
Exactly. And when Chris said annuity, folks, he doesn't mean specific annuities. It could be a pension. It could have been Social Security. Those are all considered annuity payments. Okay. So, and two 20-year-ish old kids. So two kids somewhere in their 20s. Mm-hmm. We have always lived modestly over the years on less than $100,000 of combined income. I run a small business with a very few employees on my payroll. My husband works part-time, but is chomping at the bit to retire soon and begin collecting his Social Security. I have no retirement accounts currently, and my husband has a small 401k. So with just that bit of info, if you didn't know that they had came into a windfall, you would be saying, well, these are very modest people. They're living within their means, it does appear, but they don't have a substantial amount of assets. She doesn't indicate anything about a pension. They do indicate that the husband is contemplating retiring early and claiming Social Security, which does throw up a little bit of a caution flag to me and maybe to you prior to this windfall, Chris, because if he was the main breadwinner, she doesn't state that, but I don't know, but if he was the main breadwinner, getting him to age 70, delaying his Social Security to 70, especially with the age difference between the two of them, she would be a widow for quite some time perhaps, and getting the larger Social Security benefit may have been preferable to him turning on his Social Security early. He is 62 now in our guesstimation. He's in his early 60s. So he, if he was going to retire in the next few years, she said he's chomping at the bit, he would end up filing early, and that might not have been a good thing to do. Do you agree on that, or am I off base on something?
No, exactly. People just need to remember that when you file for Social Security, it has permanent, long-lasting ramifications where the decision to claim early is going to linger, particularly in Jim's scenario where he was the main breadwinner, likely has the higher Social Security benefit, which is the one that's going to remain if he were to predecease her, the wife, in this particular case. Leaving then maybe a really long period of time of collecting a reduced amount, which could have pretty large ramifications, particularly for a couple that sounds like they don't have a lot of other assets saved. So they're going to be relying more than average on the Social Security benefit itself.
Exactly. So anyways, that's what they were originally going to do. I just wanted to go down that little rabbit hole and caution people who are in a situation similar to this and not coming into a windfall, as you'll see in a minute these people have. Be very cautious of claiming Social Security early, especially when there's a big age difference. And the reason I assumed he had the larger Social Security, Chris, she says, she doesn't have any type of retirement accounts. So it's leading me to believe that she may not have paid in. Obviously, she didn't pay into any type of retirement accounts. Therefore, she might not have had substantial earnings anywhere paying into Social Security either. So he may have the larger of the two Social Security benefits, and with an approximate 16-year age difference between them, I just kind of cringed a little when I read that. But nonetheless, that's not what they're going to do, folks. It's what they were thinking of doing, because she continues. This past month, we suddenly inherited a good chunk of money. In fact, it's game-changing money, actually. When all is said and done, it will be approximately $1 million in an inherited IRA and $1 million in an inherited brokerage account. Because of this, I think we now have a few options. You think? I think
he's right. Yeah. A lot of decisions to make.
Right. We have a few options on how to save, how to invest, spend, and eventually pass it along to my children. So I would like to get your thoughts on a few things. Anything you want before I go to the next paragraph to add or comment on? With
no, I'm just taking notes because this is the first time I'm hearing this story. So
okay.
Just writing some stuff down.
Okay. So she continues, what types of strategies should we consider, or what types of accounts should we set up? In light of the new inherited IRA rules, I believe I need to empty this IRA within 10 years. So is it recommended I spread that out equally over those 10 years? What should I do with the money when I'm forced to take it out? Fund a retirement account, buy an insurance policy, maybe buy an annuity. I'd want to be tax efficient as possible in the process. What she means is tax efficient of taking the money out. I don't anticipate needing a whole lot of this money to live on. But the supplemental income would certainly provide a nice cushion to us and enable us to do some of the things that we probably never could have, such as travel more, do some home improvements, update our old car, and help our kids out. There's a lot you probably want to comment on that. So do I. Let me read her last paragraph before we jump back into that third paragraph. We do not have much in terms of life insurance, and we do not have any long-term care coverage or protection, so we are open to that. And although leaving my kids money when we pass would be our preferred, it is not our main consideration. I am still in good health and wonder if I should start a life insurance policy for the benefit of my children and fund it over the next 10 years with my IRA distributions. Do you think this would be wise, as opposed to simply leaving my children whatever is left over that we did not spend while we were alive? Looking forward to your ideas and comments. Thanks so much. Georgia from Georgia. So, interesting email. I'm sure you picked up on a lot of what I picked up on. And the first thing is her first sentence in her third paragraph, and I'll repeat it. What types of strategies should we consider, or types of accounts should we set up? You should set up no accounts right now, besides the accounts that they're in. Take a breather. This is my opinion. We'll get Chris's opinion in a second. But in my opinion, the last thing you want to do is lead with products. You should lead with a plan. So before you run out and you listed some of the things you were thinking, should you buy? Should you open up a retirement account? Remember, Chris, she doesn't have one, she said. Mm-hmm. Should she open up a retirement account? Should she buy an insurance policy? I'm assuming she means life insurance. Or should she buy an annuity? You should buy nothing right now. I always tell people, how can I or any competent financial planner tell you what to do with your money before we first determine what your money has to do for you? So I would not lead with a product. I would not consider working with anyone who leads with a product. That this person is just going to, oh my goodness, yes, we got to get this inside an annuity and you're going to need guaranteed income and buy this, or you need to bring your money over to me and I'm going to manage it for 1% a year. That's 20 grand that person's going to be taking on a $2 million portfolio. Before you start signing on any dotted line, you should first consider a plan that will prioritize what's important to you and begin establishing a roadmap on the best way of getting there. You have a lot of moving parts: funding a retirement, determining the type of Social Security benefits your husband might want, or claiming strategy your husband may want to do. You have an age difference between the two of you. You have children you might want to protect, long-term care needs that you never thought you would be able to protect before you need to start evaluating. So in my opinion, Chris, getting a plan is the first thing she should do. What are your thoughts?
That was number one on my list as well. There's a lot of planning opportunities. Some people that don't have a lot of flexibility kind of go with it on a seat-of-your-pants approach, and they may not have a lot of maneuvering available to them, so a plan might not be feasible. Maybe they couldn't afford it normally. Maybe there weren't really much moving parts, so they couldn't do anything or consider alternatives because they were kind of locked into the very, very basics. But now that you have this windfall, as you say, which is essentially the source of this money is irrelevant, in my opinion. I mean, there's a couple of unique things that are going to have to be dealt with because of, like, the distribution rules now on an inherited IRA, things like that are obviously unique to this circumstance. But as far as the what should I do with this, they're in exactly the same position as someone who had saved $2 million and was considering retiring, where the husband is thinking, I'm about done here. I'm in my early 60s. I'd like to retire. What's the best way for me to, well, first of all, can I do it? Does it look feasible? And secondly, what's the best way, the best path forward, as you say, to accomplish this retirement that we would like to do? So there's a little bit that's unique, again, that it was an inheritance, but most of it is just straightforward planning that needs to be done.
Exactly. So let's chat about that a little bit, Chris. And listener, you're new to this. I'm going to assume, and again, if I'm reading too much into this or make an assumption that doesn't apply to you, don't take it personally. We tell that to all our listeners. We don't have you in front of us where we can ask these questions. But I'm going to guess, based on the modesty of your situation, the relative low amount of assets that you had prior to this windfall, you lived a very simple life, modest life within your means. You weren't flashy, you didn't spend too much, but you also didn't grow much in assets. So you may not have someone that you can reach out to for advice. So I wanted to explain to you, if you walk into a lot of financial planners' offices, or at least people who are holding themselves out as being financial planners, and lead with, I just inherited $2 million and I don't know what to do with it. Can you help me? You'll be walking out of there with a potpourri of things that they just sold you. And I'm going to encourage you to first look to hire an advisor who is willing to work and plan for you without needing you to give them your money to manage or to buy something from them, be that an investment advisory relationship or some type of insurance product or some type of brokered sold product. And it could be an investment advisor, Chris, who doesn't receive commissions but is only going to help them do planning as an ancillary to them first giving him or her the $2 million, and they insist on managing it, and part of that management, they're going to give a quote-unquote financial plan. So we would caution you against that, and we would caution you against someone who says, oh, you need to buy this from me, you need to buy that from me. And instead, look for someone who will simply charge you a fee to do an impartial plan, and then you can better decide, either through that relationship or a different relationship, who is going to help you with everything else. So I would be very careful even trying to get a plan first, because a lot of investment advisors and a lot of insurance agents, they will offer a quote-unquote plan, Chris, but you know what they're ultimately trying to do is sell some sort of insurance product or sell some sort of investment advisory relationship or even sell some sort of brokered product. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, and that's going to be true even if you go to a say a well-known company instead of just picking someone office that you wander into in your local town. Some people think they can get away from that potential. It's truly a conflict of interest. It may not be called that by everybody, but that's really what we're describing here. And go instead to a, and I don't want to name any, but you all know all the names that you hear advertised that will help you with your financial situation and your investments, et cetera. There's plenty out there that are very well respected and have a very recognizable names attached to them. And they will provide some of these planning services, but again, you're going to become connected to them by bringing your money to them. And this isn't from us, this is from people who have relationships with these outfits that then end up talking to us, because the quote plan that they receive as part of this overall financial relationship that they have with these companies isn't really particularly insightful or helpful. It is. Is it a plan? Yeah, kind of. But is it really something that is insightful, is very customized to their situation, deals with the concerns that they really have, and actually provides them with actionable information and a true, clear path forward? Most of the time, no. Even if it's from one of these very large, well-known companies that works in the financial services industry. So there are individuals that are going to be conflicted because they want to sell you something because that's their livelihood, which isn't inherently bad, but it is what it is. It creates this conflict. It's much better to get impartial information from someone who doesn't have an incentive to guide you one way or another. They have an incentive simply to lay out the map as they see it in front of you and describe your situation and analyze it in an impartial way, and provide you with advice that doesn't, you know, whether you take the advice or not, doesn't affect them personally. That's when you're going to get their honest opinion. And as long as they're talented and educated and experienced, hopefully you'll get information that's better than you can come up with on your own. But it's not just be wary of the individuals. Some people think they'll escape that by instead going kind of directly to one of these big, giant institutions, and they may not think there's a conflict there, but there really is. There's a conflict of interest, not that they don't want to service you and take care of you. It's this, that they don't have an incentive to maybe do it as well or as deeply or as informatively as you really need.
Exactly. There's all different levels of financial plans and financial advice. It's hard for us to tell you who you should hire. We've done podcasts on that before. You can search for them. You can work with firms that are local. You can work, like Chris said, with national firms. You can work with firms remotely, like we work with clients. I'm not saying you have to call us, but we work with clients all over the country. Just try to find someone who is willing to do the planning with no expectations or requirements that you invest through them or purchase anything through them. You very well may do that later, but you want someone at first who at least is going to give you impartial advice and the ability for you to do as you please or implement that advice as you please. That the advice is not predicated on purchasing an investment or purchasing insurance. And notice I said purchasing an investment, because asset management, you're buying it. You're buying advice. You're purchasing something. And whether you are paying a fee to have your $2 million managed, or whether you're paying a commission to buy some type of insurance or brokered product is immaterial. Your advice is predicated on you doing something with that $2 million. I'm telling you to do nothing with that $2 million right now. I wouldn't panic. I would keep it safe, and I would try to get your ducks in a row. You went from being very simple and modest to having a more complex situation. And you have to look at all of that and figure out a lot of things, and don't rush into it. Take it slow and get a plan first. Based on your ages, again, we're assuming about a 16-year age difference between you and your husband. He is very close to retirement. From your own admission, he's quote-unquote chomping at the bit to stop his part-time work and begin collecting his Social Security and retire. Well, you're only 46. Are you, and you own your own business. Are you planning on keeping working? Would you like to maybe expand your payroll a little bit more to hire another you, if you would, and allow you to be able to get more time off and spend with your husband during his go-go years? With a 16-year age difference, he may be chomping at the bit also to be doing some things that he always wanted to do. You do allude to that. You guys would like to travel more. Well, should you start looking at utilizing some of that money to cover some payroll expenses to hire people to allow you more time off? That could be something you use the money for.
Right, and that and brought up that immediately, that already has gone off in another direction that's good on this list of things we're putting together. That in this particular case, again, this has nothing to do with them inheriting something, but the fact that they have now $2 million to help them retire. We have seen other folks that in a very similar circumstance with this age difference, where it's almost like they, the younger spouse, in this case in their mid-40s, kind of takes a sabbatical, if you will. Yep. And instead of waiting, if you wait until you're 55 or 60, your older spouse is going to probably be well beyond the go-go years, is what we call them. And it can make perfect sense, and we've absolutely seen this, where people plan to take a 10-year, 8 to 10-year sabbatical, and then actually go back to work. Go back to work. If you're 45 now, take a sabbatical to 55, and then go back to work for 5 to 8 years, if that's what you want to do. And with proper planning, it might be possible to do that. But unless you put a plan together and do the projections and take a look at what, you know, what's possible, you don't know if that's a you know, likely.
And that's what I was trying to explain to her.
That's a great point.
And use some of the money for that. It's just possible. I know it. Let's just say I had a wife. Well, geez, I don't even have a woman, let alone a wife. But let's just say I did, Chris, and there was a big age difference between us. And I came into some money. I don't want to close this business down. But if I was the older one and my spouse was younger and we inherited $2 million, I might be approaching you and saying, you know what, Chris, I'd like to enjoy a little bit of travel and with my wife, and I'm going to hire another me. And I'm going to use some of my inheritance to allow this person maybe to work part-time even, but give me a little more time off, Chris, and I'm going to go on a semi-retirement for X amount of years. Or do something like that. That could be something I would do. And we have seen people in our practice, listener, do that. And that's what was running through my mind when I was thinking of that. Geez, with this age difference, and they listed travel, and she owns her own business, she never indicated she wanted to close it down. She didn't say, oh my God, I hate my business. She said, I've got a small business, a few employees. She didn't indicate if she had to be there. I'm assuming she has to be. It's just another thing to look at. That's all I'm trying to give her is ideas.
Yep.
Okay, now she gets into a little. So I think she gets a first bit of advice, hopefully, in recap. Don't buy anything yet. You listed a bunch of things. It very well may be you buy everything you listed. An investment account, which you called a retirement account, an annuity, and what was the other? Life insurance. Mm-hmm. You may end up getting all of those, but get nothing right now until you get a plan and start with a planner who is going to give you their impartial advice and not force you to do anything else with them. You may on your own elect to continue that relationship, and you may buy the insurance, buy investment management, open retirement accounts through that advisor, but it is not a prerequisite. I got it, right?
You got it.
All right. I nailed it. It's not a requirement of that advisor. Okay. I think we covered that ad nauseum. Yes? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Perfect. We did, again, want to throw out there, look at perhaps a semi-sabbatical retirement type thing and start spending some of your husband's go-go years together. Your go-go, slow-go, no-go years, listener, do not match your husband's go-go, slow-go, no-go years. And I'm assuming and hopeful, based on how you wrote this, you guys have a very close relationship. Enjoy yourself. It's not all about work. Use some of this windfall, if you will, maintain your business, hire some good help, and maybe spend a little bit of time with your husband. Just a thought, not saying you need to do it, just wanted to throw that out there. Then she gets into the IRA, and here's things get a little unique. Because yes, under the Secure Act, listener, you now have to close this IRA within 10 years of inheriting it. You never indicated if it was a traditional IRA or a Roth. I'm going to guess it's traditional because if it was a Roth, I think you would have identified it as such, which means that $1 million is now taxable to you. And you earn, from your own admission, you earn less than $100,000 a year of combined income. So let's just assume you earn $90,000 a year. That's your gross income. You are going to have your standard deduction. Most likely, I don't think you're itemizing, but you may. But you're going to now add on top of that, Chris, if you did it in equal amounts over 10 years, nearly doubling your income. The good news is they're still going to be at about $180,000, $190,000 of income. Not to the point where they're going to be in the top tax bracket.
Well, so, that's also assuming that the husband keeps working. If he stops working, that base 90 grand should decline.
True.
Which will be coincidental with the
especially
IRA
if he delays distributions, his Social Security
right,
as well.
Right. And we haven't even gotten to that topic, but that's definitely something that should be coordinated in this whole story.
Well, that's where I was going to go, so let's run down that hole right now. Even if your assets were to double and you're going to get now $190,000 a year, and we're again assuming you earn $90,000, Chris is 100% correct. If your husband stops working, your income will be a little bit lower as well. Your taxes are not going to be in the uber high tax bracket. It's not like you already had $400,000 of income and this extra $100,000 was going to push you guys into the top bracket. That's not the situation that you're going to have. But it started getting me to think that if he delays his Social Security, which we led with, I think that's what you should have done anyways when you didn't have this inheritance – But if he delays, Chris, that could keep some of his taxable income even lower and allow them a little bit better opportunity to get the $100,000 out of the the inherited IRA. And it will allow the husband, who we're assuming for the sake of this argument, who has the higher retirement benefit in Social Security, to delay to age 70. So I just thought it was kind of a win-win there. But you're the Social Security expert. What do you think?
I think with this windfall and the husband's age and wanting to retire pretty soon, I think I can't imagine a plan being put together that would not encourage, or I guess discourage, early claiming of Social Security. I think there's all kinds of supporting reasons for him not to claim immediately when he retires. First of all, it'll allow you to get more of that money out of the IRA at low income tax rates, as low as possible, that is. It's because you have this money coming in, you have this money available, the question of do we have enough money to live on is gone now. Initially you have that, and then this is going to give the opportunity for that Social Security benefit to grow tremendously as you delay, not necessarily all the way to 70. Some people just refuse to do that, even if all the numbers indicate it's a good idea. But there are reasons why you wouldn't, but it would relieve the pressure of feeling like you need to turn it on immediately. And I can't imagine a impartial financial plan coming together and saying, oh yeah, it does look like a good idea to claim at 62 or however old you are at retirement. I just can't imagine that happening. So I think, again, we don't know every detail about this case, but what's been shared with me so far definitely leads me to encourage them to not turn on his Social Security immediately. They have all this money they have to take out and recognize as income. Now, as we've talked about before, you don't have to take it out evenly over those 10 years, but in order to minimize their taxes, they probably are in the situation where they want to try to smooth it out over that 10-year period, so that they can minimize the taxes that are going to be charged to that distribution as it comes out. Piling it all up in 1 year would seem to make no sense whatsoever. And they need the money. I mean, they need money coming in because he's wanting to retire. So those two things kind of line up. And I'm not supportive of the immediate claiming of Social Security in this case.
Perfect. We agree on that. Okay. So then she continues and she asks, do we recommend, is it recommended to spread out equally over 10 years the distributions? And what should I do with the money? And that's where she listed fund a retirement account, buy an insurance policy, or buy an annuity. Is it recommended you spread out over 10 years? At a basic level, I would say sure. That would make a little bit of sense, but I can't say for certain because I don't know everything in your situation. And it may or it may not make sense. You may want to skip a couple of years, but my gut tells me, Chris, right now, with the Trump tax cuts being around for the next 5 years, and depending on what future tax rates might be, it may behoove them, it may not behoove them, to take out a little bit more.
Right.
Or to try to take out all of it over 5 years and not 10 years. I don't know. What you need to make sure, what I wanted to get to, listener, is when you hire your financial planner, make sure the planner can also... Can you hear me okay, Chris?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, I had it on speakerphone even though I was talking into the receiver and I couldn't hear me talking.
Well,
it was
weird.
Yeah.
Yeah,
very weird.
We've heard you fine this whole time.
Oh, excellent. Good, because I couldn't hear me. Did I sound brilliant?
About the same.
Okay. What I wanted you to know, listener, is it very well may make sense to spread it out over 10 years, or it may make sense not to. It may make sense to take 50, 60, 70% of it out over the first 5 years while the Trump tax cuts are around. Try to make sure the advisory firm you hire is going to be able to do tax projections and planning as well. That's where I was trying to get with this, Chris.
Yep, yep, for sure.
You, a lot of planners, and God bless them, there's some really good planners out there. But they'll tell you, hey, I'm going to do financial analysis. You need to go to your tax person and have them figure out the tax pot. Try to find a firm that will do the tax planning as well. So they have tax professionals and financial planning professionals working in conjunction with each other. And again, find a firm that is not going to require you to have them do your taxes. So you don't have to have them prepare your taxes and file your taxes. They're willing to give you tax advice and then tell you, hey, go take this to your current tax advisor, or if you do it on your own, go take this to your TurboTax program or whatever. Or you may decide after, hey, we want to hire you for more than just planning. Can you actually help us do the tax advice? But the point that I'm trying to get at is having a firm that understands the nuances of taxes, especially as they relate to retirees. You're going to be half retired, half not. Your husband might be a retiree, you may not. Or you may be on a sabbatical if you like that idea and semi-retired, with a full-on retired husband who's significantly older than you. So you've got a lot of unique potential tax issues. So I'm just saying a firm with some tax knowledge would be beneficial. Yep. What are your thoughts?
Yes, because that is a big bunch of taxable money right there that you need to negotiate properly, and not only just straightforward taxes. The other thing they're going to have to navigate, most likely, that she said she had a small business, so she probably doesn't have a big, full-blown corporate benefits package. And he's retiring. He might be very well on the open market, and she as well, for medical insurance. And they're going to have to navigate this whole wild world of ACA tax credits, premium tax credits, which is another tax, if you will, if you think of it as such. It's going to be a cost to recognizing too much income as you lose those rebates or lose those premium credits. And so that's also something. It isn't just, do they know the basics of income tax? Do they know the auxiliary charges that are connected to recognizing income that you're going to face? And make sure to take that into consideration too. That, and then ultimately, as your husband reaches 65 and goes on Medicare, they're going to have to be navigating this world of Irma, possibly. They don't have an outrageous amount, but if they have combined income, if she continues working and then they're having these distributions, they might cause themselves, without proper planning, to be affected by Irma. I think they have every opportunity to avoid it in this case. I don't think they're absolutely going to be captured by Irma. But with the wrong steps forward, they could be dealing with that, and where simple choices might have avoided it. So I think these are all in that kind of tax and other governmental fees category that need to be factored into any of these decisions.
Exactly. Which leads me, the firm, the fact that you own a business, listener, could be a wonderful tax planning strategy.
Sure. Yep.
So you have to keep that in mind. You didn't share anything with us about your employees, if they're full-time, part-time, are they family member employees, are they employees. I don't know much about your situation. However, it is quite possible, depending on your income, your potential future income, you could open a 401k style account, and you're not over the age of 50 yet, but once you are, you would be able to put quite a bit of money, relatively speaking, quite a bit of money into your 401k. I don't know in 4 years what the limits are going to be, but once you're over the age of 50, what is it now, Chris, 19, or is it 19? $19,500 plus a $6,500 catch up.
It's $19,500 now.
Okay. And is the catch up six or six and a half?
Six and a half.
Okay. So they can put in 26,000 today. Now, you're not over 50 yet, listener, but in a few years you will be. Don't forget, when you put in 26,000, that's a dollar-for-dollar deduction. So maybe you don't take everything out right up front, because once you turn 50, maybe you're going to be opening up a 401k and really overfunding it. So you might be getting this taxable money out of your IRA, but you're going to throw, you're not saving anything for retirement right now, you said, but you're going to throw $26,500 in a 401k. That reduces $26,500 from the IRA she inherited, Chris. Right.
And that's just the employee side. As a business owner, depending again on the situation, we don't know the actual makeup of the company and that sort of thing. But with proper planning, you might be able to have the employer side fund aggressively too. And essentially, you know, this is going to be hard to describe on the radio, but or on the podcast. But essentially, you have these forced distributions from the inherited IRA. You can't avoid those. But what you can avoid, you could shift the taxes on your current income from your job until later, much later for you, being only in your mid-40s. So if you were to aggressively, if you're allowed, you know, the degree of aggressiveness will depend on what type of plan you can set up and have it work within your company structure and your employee situation. We don't know enough about it to give you specifics, but there's the potential there to shove a ton of money in there, essentially delaying the recognition of a bunch of your income from this business until later on, well past when the distributions have come out from this inherited IRA, and essentially avoid the double whammy taxes that are going on. You'll have plenty of money to live on because you've got this money being forced out of the IRA, the inherited IRA. That will substitute possibly for the income you normally would be taking home from your job, because that money you might be redirecting to a retirement plan that then can be distributed long after this inherited IRA is drained. So there's all kinds of moving parts tax-wise here that open up possibilities.
Absolutely. So these are things that you need to obviously, listener, consider, and hopefully the advisory firm that you will be working with will bring a lot of these to your attention. And then I can also throw out there, and we talked about this on past shows, you don't have to just consider a defined contribution style plan. You could do a defined benefit style plan, and this is where the employees you have, their status, are they full-time, part-time, family members or not, is going to come into
their
play.
Ages.
But it could very well be, depending on how it's structured, where you could get significant money into a defined benefit plan. Defined benefit plan is a pension plan, listener. We mentioned the pension plan that will never be a pension plan. It will you'll absolve the pension plan when you retire and move all that money into an IRA. I don't want to get too deep into it. I got to get Valerie on the show, that woman that I told you about, Chris. But she'll explain how all these work. I'm just thinking out loud, and I'm not saying it's going to work for her, but it needs to be evaluated, because if her business structure is such and her income is steady, you're going to need a little bit of steady income, it is quite possible that she could funnel a lot of the forced distributions from the inherited IRA, which are going to come out and onto her 1040, obviously onto her taxable income, but on the business side, funnel a tremendous amount of money into this defined benefit plan as a deduction, and the two of them wash.
Yep. Exactly where I was getting at. Yep.
Yep. And it might work for you. I don't know. There is so much we don't know about your situation, but I'm just trying to say this is another thing you might want to consider. And hopefully you're starting to understand why you want to lead with a planning firm and not a product firm. You don't need investment advice right now. You don't need an annuity. You don't need life insurance right now. You need a plan. And then you might need all three of those. But right now, that's why we said get a plan. So anyways, I can't answer and tell you without more detail if you should spread these RMD distributions out over 10 years, if you should front run them, if you should backload them. I can't tell you if you should do a work 401k or a work defined benefit plan, or if your job that you own, your self-employed business is even going to help you or not. But these are things that you need to look at. Then she asks, what should she do with the money when it finally is forced out and she has to take it out? Should she fund a retirement account, buy life insurance, or an annuity? So we already addressed the retirement account. You very well may fund a retirement account because it's going to allow you to wash some of that money you're being forced to take out from your tax return. And yes, you may do it through your company because you'll be allowed to put significantly more money into it than you would if you had to open an IRA. But again, I don't know enough about your situation to say definitively you're going to do that. But as far as her question on if she should open a retirement account, Chris, I say it's likely because it could help her reduce some of the immediate taxes.
Yep.
Do you agree on that?
Totally agree. I think it is not known for sure, but I think it's likely that some strategy there involving her business could really help her out.
Exactly. Then she said, should I buy life insurance? I'll take that up next when you get into inheritance for your children, listener. So let's put the life insurance on hold. My thought right now. Then you say, should I buy an annuity? That, I would say right now, is again a big question mark, listener. Could an annuity help you? Perhaps. Do you need to buy it now? Probably not. The older you, maybe the 66, 76, 80-year-old you might need an annuity, but I don't think you need one right this minute. That's my take. I don't see it being a problem. The only thing that's got me a little hesitant, she has a $1 million brokerage account. Don't forget that. Right. We're focusing just on her $1 million IRA. You've got this brokerage account you inherited, listener. I'm going to assume the assets in that brokerage account received a step-up in basis at the death of whoever left it to you. So that $1 million could probably be liquidated, Chris, right now. I don't mean to literally run out and do this, listener, but you could probably liquidate it now with little to no capital gains. Do you agree?
Likely, since this is, I think, happening very recently.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That $1 million, depending on how it ultimately does get consumed or invested or used, might generate significant income to the tune of $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year that could ruin your ability maybe to do some tax planning or ACA premium credit planning, or might be enough that it pushes you and your husband, who in just one more year, listener, we're assuming your husband is 62 because you said he's in his early 60s. But remember, beginning at age 63, your income is going to impact his Medicare premiums. And you guys are married, so if you have income above $173,000-ish, somewhere around that now, you could be subject to the first Medicare premium surcharges. You're going to be right around that amount in income, depending on how much you take out over the next 10 years from the IRA, how much every year you take out from the inherited IRA. Well, if you have to deal with a $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 taxable dividend and interest coming out of your investment account, Chris, that could be enough that pushes you over. So you do have to recognize that that taxable account might become a tax nightmare at some point in time. Mm-hmm. Or what we call that maybe taxable account, because it may be subject to taxes, it may not. You could put it in municipal bonds, even though the muni bond market got a little hairy and is a little hairy in light of the COVID and the lower tax receipts. You could put it in munis. You could put it in tax-managed ETFs or something like that that aren't going to generate a lot of taxable income. Or you could put it in a commission-free, we talk about this a lot, a commission-free variable annuity. It's not going to have high fees, not going to have penalty periods. You can put money in, take money out whenever you want. Or you can put it, if you want to be very safe, in some series of MIGAs, multi-year guaranteed annuities, that would pay guaranteed interest and not a risky investment like the variable annuity would. But in the MIGA, you get a set guaranteed amount of interest that you can keep rolling over, listener. So when one matures, it just rolls right into another one, which rolls into another one, and all the embedded taxes, if you will, stay inside that annuity while you're trying to drain your IRA. It's just going to allow you maybe to get some more tax-managed treatment to that IRA, Chris, if they didn't have to deal with $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 of taxable income also coming out of this investment account.
Right. And Jim listed a bunch of kind of specific things to do, but to just back up one step to make sure she understands what we're talking about and other listeners maybe understand what the issue is here, is that depending on how the investments in that brokerage account are invested, investments inside of a non-qualified account like a brokerage account, the overall return that you earn over time is a function of a couple of types of returns. One is actual income that's recognized in a given year, like dividends or interest distributions or realized gains that happen. Then there's the deferred gains that can happen over time. The deferred gains aren't taxed until they're realized. And depending on the structure and what you actually have in the brokerage account, sometimes accounts intentionally have more of one of those than the other, more actual income coming out and being taxed in any given year versus more deferred gains that are deferred and not having tax implications. If that brokerage account you inherited and you just keep it the way it's invested now was designed to generate current income in every year, that thing, even if you don't take the money out of the account, this is the bummer for people, even though you don't put it in your pocket, it stays in the brokerage account, it's throwing off or generating taxable income in interest, dividends, realized gains that are going to end up on your 1040 and be mixed in with all this other stuff going on. And the big issue you have, of course, is this 10-year window where you're going to have to get the money out of that IRA, every dollar of which is going to be taxable income, recognized taxable income. And you don't want to have this other thing generating even more, causing you issues as far as the tax bracket you're in, and then all the ancillary things that happen. So Jim was mentioning, essentially, make sure you take a look at that brokerage account and maybe reallocate it now, redistribute it with this in mind, that maybe you still want it invested in a certain way, but you can, via these choices, have it invested where it's not generating this current yearly taxable income events. It's more deferred. It's all the gains and everything that's happening in there gets deferred to another time when you're not taking out these big IRA distributions. And he mentioned that list of specifics, and there's even others that would be worthy of consideration. But somebody needs to look at that. And that, of all things, is probably, I wouldn't call it urgent, but I would call it, I would put it at the top of the, towards the top of the list of things to address this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree.
So.
And that's all I was trying, and you summed it up perfectly. And hopefully you understand what we were saying, listener. During the 10-year period where you're going to be forced to take money out of the inherited IRA, you can control the taxation of that brokerage account. And one way of doing it is with an annuity. And it's not a four-letter word. It's not a I hate annuities and so should you, Mr. Ken Fisher type thing. Now, an investment advisor may not want you to do that because they want to charge you to manage your assets. although they could charge you on some annuities. You could put it in what are called investment-only variable annuities. In short, they don't pay any type of commission to the person who is putting you in that annuity. None whatsoever. The person putting you in it doesn't make diddly squat off of it. They generally have to charge you for their time and advice. So you would pay them directly for their time and advice. But what it allows her to do, Chris, is control the distributions of the income. Now, I would not put anything in the annuity that you intend to spend right away. Now, you might be thinking, oh, that's because there's a penalty. You don't want to buy these evil annuities. There's a penalty. Investment-only variable annuities sold without a commission have no penalties. You can close it whenever you want. Put money in on Monday, take it out on Tuesday. The insurance company doesn't give a damn. They're only holding the money for its tax deferral, Chris. It's all they're doing. They're holding the money in an annuity for the tax deferral. It's because of LIFO accounting. Do you want to explain what that is? If she thinks she can put $1 million in and then let it earn $50,000-$60,000 tax deferred, listener, inside the annuity, you do not pay taxes on the earnings that it's generating. Outside of the annuity, you have to. So those forced earnings on top of the forced RMDs from the inherited account could push you into unfavorable tax brackets, especially with your husband very close to being subject to Medicare and the premium surcharges under IRMA, income-related monthly adjusted amount, otherwise known as Medicare premium surcharges. But she can't just selectively remove her principal, can she, Chris?
No, unfortunately. So when you do start to take the money out, it's going to come out a certain way. But you get this, buy yourself some time to recognize the income that's coming out of those investments, depending
exactly
on how they're the wrapper that they're put in. If they're just left in the brokerage account, you don't really have control over it beyond selectively choosing the types of investments that are in the account. But maybe you want to be invested in the things that it's invested in right now, and they generate a lot of dividends and interest. Maybe you want to keep them. You don't want to have to choose something else to change the tax situation. One way would be what Jim mentioned. Put this in this other wrapper to get you the deferral of tax recognition going. Buy you some time until that IRA, that inherited IRA, is drained out. Then you can start taking the money back out of there.
Exactly. So when you buy an annuity, folks, this is called a deferred annuity. If she did buy it, Chris and I want to be clear, we're indicating in our opinion that she should look at these investment-only variable annuities that will not pay any commission to the person who helps you buy it. And it generally has very, very low cost relative to what the broker-sold variable annuities will have. And there's no penalty periods. You can put your money in 2020 and take it all out in 2022 if you want. Or we recommended a multi-year guaranteed annuity, which works similar to the old CDs. You would buy a 3-year term or a 5-year term or a 7-year term. You can even get 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. But most of them sell by those longer terms, 3, 5, 7, 10 years. They'll pay a guaranteed amount of interest for those terms, and then they'll mature, and you can decide what to do with them. They're going to be less flexible for you in this particular case, listener, than the investment-only variable annuity, I think. But they do provide that guaranteed interest rate if you don't want to invest. She didn't indicate to us, Chris, if she's right, an aggressive investor or not, so I don't know. I'm just trying to give her both options.
Yeah.
The key is when you take the money out. That's what I'm trying to get to. When you take the money out of these deferred annuities, the government says, hey, wait a minute. We're being nice. This is the government talking now. We're being nice. We let you put this $1 million you inherited, and you didn't even pay taxes on that $1 million because we gave it a step up in basis. Let's just say you inherited this from your uncle. I have no idea who you inherited it from, but let's just say it was your uncle, and he put $300,000 in the brokerage account, and you inherited it when it was worth $1 million. So there was $700,000 of gain that the government wanted to tax. Well, they never got to, because when you inherited it, they wipe out that $700,000 of gain and say, boom, your new basis is $1 million, listener. You inherited it at the value it was when your uncle, in my example, passed away. So they never taxed your inheritance, and I don't know if you, I doubt whoever you inherited it from was subject to estate tax, but I don't know. But you never had to pay, in my opinion, I don't think you've had to pay or will have to pay much in income taxes or capital gains taxes when you sell that $1 million. Then they're going to let you put it in an annuity. And when it's sitting in the annuity for the next 10 years while you're trying to drain your IRA you inherited, any interest and dividends it generates is not being taxed to you. So again, the government is losing. The government's going to put their foot down when it comes time to take the money out.
Right.
That's what I'm getting at. And what do I mean by that, listener? Well, you might be thinking, wow, Jim, I put my money in this non-broker sold investment-only variable annuity. It grew pretty good over the next 10 years as I was draining my inherited IRA. And now I've got $1,300,000 in there. Okay, a 30% gain over 10 years. That could be reasonable. How do you, now you might be sitting there and saying, ooh, what if I just take that $1 million I put in, Chris, out? I already paid taxes on that. And let me keep the $300,000 of gain that the government wants me to tax. That would be great if she could do that.
That would be extra great, but that's not allowed. They have
rules.
It used to be. Well, that's going way back.
That goes back to the 80s.
Right.
That's how annuities originally worked, folks.
Yeah. And they finally said, nope, we're not going to do that. When you take the money out, the first thing that's going to come out are the earnings.
Exactly.
So for a while, until you get all that $300,000 out of there, the gain part that is in his hypothetical, and this is hypothetical, that's going to come out first. So as you start taking money out, you won't be able to selectively take it out. But remember, I don't think in this case that's a big deal, because you're not going to have those big, giant $100,000 a year IRA distributions being forced upon you.
That's where I was going with this.
And so, yes, it's going to come out and all be taxable, but you've now dodged the bullet. You've dodged it for this, 10 years or whatever, as you've been draining this inherited IRA, which was a blessing and a tax curse all at the same time. But you've minimized the curse. You've gotten the most out that you could get managing your taxes, leaving this other money off to the side so it doesn't impact you or increase the curse. And now you take it out, and yes, it's taxable, but you don't, you've got a lot better situation at that time than having it happening right real time while you're trying to manage this $1 million IRA distribution.
Exactly. So that's what I was trying to explain there. And when it comes time, in my hypothetical, I said your million grew to $1,300,000. That $300,000 can now be selectively taken out over a number of years or all at once. Yeah. It's just that the first dollars out will be your gain. Now, inside an annuity, even though if you bought a variable annuity, which allows you to invest that money in the equity markets, hence the word variable annuity, whereas the MYGA, multi-year guaranteed annuity, is a guaranteed fixed annuity that pays a set amount of interest every year, the variable annuity, it's going to depend on what investments do. However, it will always be taxed as income. It's never going to be taxed as a capital gain. Do keep that in mind. It will be taxed to you as income because it's coming from an annuity. Now, the final thing to keep in mind if you do the annuity strategy. And anything you want to add?
Nope.
Okay. So do keep in mind on the where was I going to go? There was one more.
The insurance piece we hadn't talked about with.
No, there was the life insurance, but there was one more thing on the annuity, goodness, that I wanted to share with her. Oh, you do not want to keep this investment-only variable annuity after the IRA has finally been liquidated. Keep this in mind. This is a short-term solution, but it is a long-term product. I don't want you to keep the product long-term. because annuities will always be taxed as income, not capital gain, and will not receive a step-up in basis. You indicated you wanted to tax optimize the distributions from the IRA. That's what Chris and I have been concentrated on. But you can't ignore the 800-pound gorilla in the room. That's the $1 million you got over here in a brokerage account. I would not put the full million in the annuity. Any money that you want to spend, I would keep out of the annuity, in my opinion, and just spend it and have fun. You mentioned home improvements and a new car. Don't put the home improvement and new car money in the annuity and then have to take it out later. Why? Earnings come out first. You're not going to be able to get just the basis out, Chris. Earnings come out first. It wouldn't be tax efficient to put the money in the annuity and then want to take out $30,000 to buy a new car, and it's $30,000 of earnings. Whereas if she never put the $30,000 in the annuity to begin with, she could close the bank account and not pay any taxes. Follow me on that?
Totally.
Perfect. So do not put money in the annuity that you are going to need to spend on the car, on the house, and helping your children, you said. You would like to help your children. If you want to start gifting your children $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 a year, I'm just making this up. I'm not saying you are or you aren't. Leave that money out. Or at least leave enough of the gift money you want to make out to get you to the point where the IRA is going to be fully drained. So don't put everything in the annuity. Remember, the annuity is not going to be long term. This is the final thing I wanted to say about a deferred annuity strategy that I'm telling you. What I'm getting at is once that IRA is drained, Chris, she should start draining that annuity. And because earnings come out first, you're not going to close the annuity in a lump sum, because the hope is over 10 years you got some pretty good gains inside that annuity. You'll start to drain that annuity over a number of years, just like you drained the IRA. You'll start to drain the annuity in a tax-advantaged manner and get those investments back into a regular brokerage account. Right. Because at this point, it's going right back to normal. Get it in a regular brokerage account. Start investing in those so your children will get a step up in basis, at least under current rules. Step up in basis rules may go away in the future, but they're still the rule now. So I just didn't want her to think that this was, it's a short-term problem, 10 years, but she's using a long-term solution. But I don't intend that annuity to be held long-term. I would then close it when the need for tax management is over. And that's what these investment-only variable annuities exist for, folks. And that's why they don't have the penalty periods that the broker-sold annuities have. These annuities are designed for you to put money in when you need to tax manage it and get it out when the tax management isn't needed anymore. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Perfect. Okay, I think we beat that part of the horse to death. We'll move on to the final thing. Should she consider life insurance? Yes. And I would, because you said, listener, leaving money to your children is important but not a priority. You said that, but at the end, you also said it would be nice to leave something for your children. So you could utilize life insurance. You could say, hey, you know what? I'm never going to spend $2 million. We've always lived very reasonable and modest lives. I'm never going to spend this money. I know I'm going to be able to leave my children a lot of this money. I'm not going to buy any life insurance. That is 100% possible. You could do that, and I will not dispute that. But if you really want to spend some of that money or leverage it, that's what life insurance is. I would look at a second-to-die guaranteed universal life policy, not a single-to-die, not one on just you or one on just your husband, but one on both of you. We've talked about this repeatedly on the show. If you insure two lives, you might be able to, well, two lives are always cheaper to insure than one life. Mm-hmm. And we talked about why that is on previous shows.
Yeah, let's not tell them the why, but for people who didn't listen to that, the strange, you might be thinking, wait a minute, she's only in her 40s. her life insurance is going to be way less than the 62-year-old or 63-year-old husband. Putting him on must raise the premiums over what she would pay, and the opposite is true. That's what Jim meant. That's what Jim means, and it's true that two lives is less expensive than one just because of the actuarial statistics behind it, which is how they price life insurance. So having both of them on there will lower it even below what it would cost her alone to own the policy.
Exactly. And it should work out that way. Depending on your ratings, it might not, but most of the time it should work out exactly that way. So if you and your husband really want to guarantee an inheritance, it is quite possible you could leverage a very small part of your inheritance, 0.5% of it. That's only $10,000 a year. 0.5% a year of your windfall goes into a second-to-die life insurance policy, and that might, just might, purchase $1 million or $2 million or more of guaranteed life insurance for your children at the death of the second spouse. Now, chances are that would be you, listener. You're female, so you should live longer than a man, and there's a 16-year age difference with you and your husband. But it would end up paying at your death, which by then, your children who are only in their early 20s would hopefully be in their 50s or 60s or even older if you live a good long time. So in other words, you're guaranteeing them an inheritance much later in life to help them maybe with their own retirement, much like this inheritance helped you. So you could guarantee it with life insurance. So I'm not going to downplay that. I think it is a way you could guarantee it. And then finally, you mentioned, should you consider long-term care insurance protection? I would. I would at least evaluate how are you and your husband going to pay if one or both of you end up needing care. And with the age difference between you and the fact that you're married, you can't just walk away and say, hey, my husband, he's got Alzheimer's. I'm going to let the state of Georgia take care of him. I'm not spending any of my inheritance on him. You can't do that. You are obligated to use your assets and his assets to take care of him before the state of Georgia would. And if he was to develop, or if you were to develop, one of the truly debilitating diseases, not a typical long-term care need, which is you would need it for less than 3 years. It would start in the home. It might last just a few months or a couple of years tops. And beginning in the home, it may only set you back $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year before going into an expensive home that might set you back $100,000 a year. But if you need it for less than 3 years, which is the typical, the amount of money you inherited might cover you. Granted, it means less money going to your children, but you would protect that with the guaranteed life insurance. I could buy that, Chris, and say, maybe not. They don't need some. However, if you are worried that one of you, what if your husband developed Alzheimer's or had a stroke or Parkinson's? Or dementia, got one of these diseases, Chris, that don't cause us to die, but cause us to live still 8, 10, 12 years totally dependent on others, that is very expensive. And it might cost you, listener, a quarter of your inheritance or more. And then what if you developed a similar condition later? I think you might have enough money to cover it, but it would leave very little, if anything, to your children.
And if you were going to reserve it for that possibility, it also makes that money unavailable to spend on other things. That's the one thing
exactly.
That people always ignore. They think they have this huge nest egg, and they think, oh, I have plenty to self-insure. But if you're going to rely on it being there, you have to leave it there. It can't be spent. And when people see how much they need to leave off to the side to self-insure and how much that takes away from the other things they want to do, traveling and enjoying themselves, it's shocking to a lot. So it's worthy of consideration of other alternatives to include some type of long-term care insurance.
And the other reason is, listener, you can get what is called a partnership policy. A partnership policy will allow you to protect a certain amount of your assets and still qualify for Medicare. Medicaid. Medicaid is the program funded between the state and the feds to take care of indigent people later in life or early in life, but it's what is used for covering people for long-term care needs, Chris. These are the people who need constant care and help but don't have the money anymore. So that's called Medicaid. Well, in order for you to get Medicaid, you have to be indigent. So you could do all the right things. You could position your assets, drain the inherited IRA, enjoy yourselves a little, but your husband could develop something catastrophic. You could develop something catastrophic, and your $2 million quickly becomes significantly less, if not runs out. Well, getting a long-term care policy that's partnership qualified, and I don't want to get too deep into what that is, but they're special long-term care policies. Not every state is partnership qualified.
Thanks for pointing that out, because I was about to interject that not all states offer these. Most states do now. Most have adopted it, but it is possible to live in a state that doesn't have this type of policy.
Exactly. I did Google and see, and it looks like Georgia is one of the states that do offer it. And what it essentially is an agreement from Georgia to encourage you to buy LTC insurance. Yeah. And they're going to say, look, if you buy LTC insurance with, say, $1 million benefit, I'm just making this up, $1 million benefit. So it might start at $300,000, but it has a cost of living adjustment built into it, listener. So by time you get into your 70s or 80s and need it, it has $1 million benefit. So you get $1 million benefit, or even $500,000 benefit, whatever. You get the picture. You got some sort of benefit there. And you use it all. And then you start using your assets. You, in a worst case scenario, you would be able to qualify for Medicaid and still protect the value of the LTC you received. So rather than having to spend down all your assets if it was just you, or get down to the point where you have just a house, a car, and $113,000 if it's your spouse you're trying to protect and get on Medicaid, they would let you keep the $500,000 or $1 million of LTC that you earned. You could keep a corresponding amount of your own personal assets and not have to spend those down, Chris. So it would allow you to help protect some of your assets. Yes. So the LTC could provide a lot of benefit to you if you feel there is a need. And I'm glad you mentioned, Chris. Exactly. $2 million, a lot of people think, and a lot of our listeners who pay attention to this show probably have seven-figure portfolios. I would say the vast majority of them have around $2 to $5 million. And they might be sitting around thinking, oh, we got plenty to cover this. We'll self-fund our LTC. But I'm glad you pointed out, well, that means you can't spend it on fun as well.
Right.
You can't spend it in your 40s, 50s, and 60s. And then spend it again in your 70s, 80s, and 90s. Doesn't work that way. So if you're going to self-fund, that money comes out of your fund number. And it's just something to look at, listener. But it should be looked at last. Any type of product, be it the annuity, the insurance, the life insurance, the long-term care insurance, even the investment strategy, that's last. Do the plan first. Mm-hmm. Figure out a strategy, what is it you should do, and then start looking at all of this.
Yep.
All right. What do you think? Anything else you want to summarize, or did we cover this all?
I think we did our best hour and 20 minutes on this simple question.
It was never a simple question.
I'm being sarcastic.
Well, the sad thing is a lot of financial shows, we call them financial entertainers, they would have answered this question in 5 minutes and give some silly little thing that probably ended with, give our company a call or call one of our trusted advisors and they'll take care of you. There's a lot more here that you're going to want to consider, and that's what I wanted to get into.
Yep. Okay.
All right, so anyways, that was this EDU show on what to do when you get a sudden windfall.
Perfect. So have a good weekend.
I will. You have yourselves a great Memorial Day. People will be listening to this after Memorial Day or over Memorial Day?
After, next week, right after Memorial Day, but we're recording this right before Memorial Day weekend.
We are. So I hope everybody had a good Memorial Day, and Chris, I hope you have a good Memorial Day. And we will be in touch next week with another EDU and Q&A show.
Sounds good.
All right, talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye. So as Jim said, we will be back next week with another new show. We want to thank everyone for listening. And if you have a question, it's kind of these longer, multi-faceted questions that end up as an EDU show. Sometimes we come up with our own topic, but this one just happened to come in and seemed to be new and fresh, something we hadn't really talked about much before, and we turned it into an EDU show. We also have the Q&A show where if you just have a specific question or a more focused question, we can likely cover it on that show. In order to send us in these questions or suggestions for shows, just go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On there, you'll find a contact form where you can reach out to us. You can also read a little bit more about us, what we're doing in the retirement planning space, which is our niche. And yeah, if you have any other questions, don't hesitate to reach out. And hope everybody had a safe Memorial Day weekend. And stay safe out there, and we'll see you next week.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.